Session number 8277.
Mr. Calloway, Reel 4. So, could you summarise the state of health of the troops before the siege of Kut, then?
I would say that everybody was fit. All those who were unfit had been cleared before. We actually went into Ctesiphon, you might say, and they made use of the ships as far as they could to get them away. Everybody, all the wounded and that were cleared from the Ctesiphon battle and the subsequent actions. And we weren't encumbered with many wounded until we got to about halfway to Kut. Then we had to hold the river while they got some of them onto a ship, onto one of the boats.
What happened there? Were you involved in your battery?
No, any that could be cleared by that were cleared. But then there was a after this morning, so I suppose about mid-morning of that very day, there was a complete powwow with the General, Townsend, Nixon, and the whole lot were all there together. My captain was there and I was with them. And the debate was, what do we go from here? We make for Kut.
Could you overhear this debate?
Yes.
Can you remember anything anybody said?
Well, the first thing was, what's the state of ammunition for the artillery? So many rounds of gun, sir. Whatever, my captain said. And then Nixon said, well, I'll push on, I'll take the cavalry or something to that effect. The cavalry were about to clear the way to Kut, you see. And he was going back with them. And you press on, disengage and clear. That was just what I remember of it all.
Can you remember Townsend saying anything?
Only that he asked what the state of ammunition was with the artillery and so on.
Did Nixon see... Nixon was, of course, the commander-in-chief.
Yes,
of the
yes.
Whole, was it, did he seem to be acting in that role, or did you feel that he was being led by Townsend or vice versa?
I don't know. It's hard to say, because it was a top brass meeting and I was only a sort of horseholder. But
did you form an impression about the characters or nature of any of the people involved?
No, we were loyalty, of course. We naturally expected our commanders were on the level and were doing the best they could in the circumstances. But it was obvious that a big mistake had been made, because there was no possibility of us cracking the Turks at just outside Baghdad. I think it was a mistake, possibly.
And the ranks felt at the time it was a mistake.
Obviously, it was the first time we'd had to retreat, which was something.
But you were still loyal.
I must say that the chaps accepted it. We didn't funk. We weren't scared about our wits or anything. We were just as good as we were before. And the Turks got what they asked for if they did interfered.
Following this conference, do you remember anything else about the retreat back to Kut? Any other striking
Only
incidents?
Every time we tried to water our horses, the Arabs on the other side of the river gave us hell every time.
Shooting at you?
Yes. So we had to let the horses go without for a while.
Did but they suffer?
Yes. No. They've had to do that on a number of occasions. They'd probably get a drink tonight and not get another one till the next night, probably.
How is your own horse, by the way?
Yes, okay.
It was still...
Yes, they managed very well. It's surprising.
Were the Arabs very good shots when they...
Well, you see, they were nearly all armed with these Martini Henry lead bullet cartridges, rolled case cartridges and what have you. Old, very old stuff from way back, I don't know when. And it wasn't very accurate, but it was dastardly if you got hit by it. These lead bullets would splatter, you see. And all black powder, of course, no cordite in the cartridges, and all old stuff, really,
so
because it wasn't being made. Modern arms they didn't possess.
It was the volume of fire rather than
yes,
any individual's
that's right,
accuracy.
Yes, yes, and the ghastly wound you'd get if you got hit by one of them.
Were you suffering many casualties amongst the horses?
Oh, yes. Yes, we did. And... But by and large, I think we were lucky. We still had enough to pull the guns and wagons. We never had to leave a vehicle. Of course, we could manage if there was only two, and there was usually six.
When you were... do you remember anything else from when you were pulling back?
Yes. Yes, I remember somebody came across a pile of tin stuff. I don't know how it had been dumped, but there was cheddar cheese in one tin. I got that. And somebody else got something. And anyway, I got this busted open and dished it up between several of our chaps. I don't know how it had come to be. It must have been fallen off a cart or something, off one of these transport carts, the ordinary ration tin, you know.
And this, because you said you were on hard rations, yes, so this must have been a pleasant change.
Yes, yes. Anyway, that's when we first realised that they were tinning stuff at home here that was coming out. And first time we had it, because up to that time we'd been used to deli biscuits, which were terrible, made in India, you know. Now we were getting English biscuits coming up, which was something.
Were they very hard, the biscuits?
Yes, but the deli biscuits were terrible. Gosh.
In what way?
Cool. They were... I don't know how they were cooked or baked. They're terrible.
They're just very,
shockers,
very hard.
Yeah, could be green mould, some of them, sometimes. The packings, you see, weren't good. And tinned meat, too, was another thing. We used to get Australian mutton, mostly. No salt in the damn thing. That was terrible. But otherwise, we very seldom got fresh meat. Very seldom.
So, when did you... Is there anything else of note before you entered Kut?
No, we got in to Kut, and then, of course, there was the question of where we were all to go. And the infantry had to be located, and then they had to dig in. And before we'd started that, they were opening up on us. The Turks, you see.
The Turks were that close
behind?
Yeah,
they were that close, yes. And before we'd even settled, we were moving our battery because of they'd got a line on where we were. As it happened, we stayed in the same place in the end, in the palm grove. And we had the Kents in front of us, the East Kents.
Could you describe the emplacement you dug at Kut?
Yes. Well, the gun pit, you see. Then the dugout for the...
Could you describe the gun pit?
Well, it's... you dig down and build up, you see. Just
on
to
either
screen
side.
It, yes, on either side. With just room for the gunners to move. And just room for the piece to protrude. And that would be covering the infantry in front, in trenches.
How far behind the infantry?
Not very far in Kut.
100 yards?
Yes, barely that, perhaps. Just depends. There wasn't room, you see. But normally you'd be much further apart. But our guns by now were beginning to give trouble. And one of ours, the A-tube, had actually worn so that when the shot came out, it and didn't proceed, in other words.
It
was so bad, yes,
end.
Yes.
Now, what's the A-tube? Could you describe that?
That's the inner tube of the gun that has the ferruling.
Rifling.
The rifling, idea. Yes.
And what had happened to it? It
worn.
The rifling was no longer...
Worn, yes, it was worn with use. We'd fired so many. Well, we had fired, I can tell you. God knows how many. So that was sort of not dangerous to use.
So you didn't use it?
No, and we only discovered that, really, because one went off just in front of the Kents after we'd fired it. And they buzzed back and said, "What the hell are you trying to shoot us for?" And we got the tiffies up and they examined it and they said, "My God, rifling's out."
So that was one gun out?
They had to withdraw it, yes.
How many guns did that leave you with?
Well, that left us with five to safely to use.
So your emplacement would have five pits with the gun and the gun cruiser.
Yes, yes.
And then what other things did you dig?
Well, we had dugouts for the men, the gun crew.
What sort of dugouts were these?
Well, in the ground, dug right below ground, with a covered top to sleep in and live in.
How deep? And
about 7 feet.
Seven feet down.
So that you could stand up in it.
And it had a roof?
We had corrugated tops with mud and soil on top.
So you dig it... Would you dig it by digging a trench?
Yes.
Putting the corrugated iron
and
on and
step,
then...
Step down to
and
it.
And then throwing the mud on top again?
Yes. And of course, people would have to keep the rain out and everything and sleep in it.
And how many feet square would it be inside?
It was just enough for the gun crew to lay down in.
And how many's in the gun crew?
Six for the lot.
You didn't have any beds or anything?
Oh, no, just blankets. We never had anything but that all the whole campaign.
Had you dug these at every point or just when you...
No, only during the siege.
That was the first time you did
yes,
that?
Yes, because that was a permanent position. And we had to alternate the firing too, so that they wouldn't know which was which, where we were. It was very difficult. And we used to sometimes, when we first started, we'd open up at night on a given target, you see. But we gave that up in the end because it was beginning to pinpoint where we were.
And the flash.
Yes, and everything. Those sort of things were all experiments. But eventually, one of our guns, as I say, it was not to be used because it splattered before the infantry could clear. Anyway, the Kents in front of us said, better get rid of that one.
So you just left it, did you?
Yes, well, we pulled it out and there was no reserve guns, you see. And then, of course, when we did surrender, it was a question of blowing them up, because it was unconditional.
We'll come to that later, yes. Mm. When you moved into thing, you say the enemy, the Turks, were right upon you while you were digging these things. I presume the infantry sort of held the line in front of you in makeshift trenches, did they?
Yes, first off, and then they were permanent. And the Turks were held back by the distance we could reach them with gunfire.
How long did it take you? How long did it take the infantry and yourselves to dig in?
Oh, a matter of 24 hours probably, and then we'd improve it after that.
Well, did you
get undercover? It would take about 6-7 hours, perhaps.
Did they have barbed wire?
Oh yes, that was fortunate. We had that.
And how many rows of that would there be in?
Quite a number.
In front of the infantry?
Yes. And
Did they have communication trenches back from the front
line?
Oh,
yes, right back. I used to go up with the casualty report from the town where we were billeted every day to the gun line. And I used to go up these communication trenches, which were a zigzag thing up there, you see.
So you stayed underground, basically?
Oh, underground all the way, yes. They couldn't see you because we couldn't come above surface.
How deep were they then?
7 or 8 feet.
And how wide?
Just enough for two people to pass.
About 3 foot, 4 foot?
Yes.
And how long was it before all this infrastructure of the trench system appeared? How long was that? Did that take?
Oh, it was only a matter of a couple of days before it was all organised, yes.
Communication trenches as well?
Yes, we had to get on with it quickly. It was done during the night as well.
Did you have any... The line in front of you, was that the front line? Was there any second line?
There was first, second and third line.
And then you?
Yes.
Was the wire between the second, first?
No, the first line had the major wire, what do you call it. The second line had a very sort of skimpy, what's the name, line. But the main was the front line.
So there'd be the wire and the three lines?
Yes.
And then you were about... 100 yards behind that,
yes, in the outer portion of the village.
And about how many yards from the front line?
Oh, I suppose probably about 150.
Mm. So the three lines were quite close to each
other.
There wasn't much room, in other words.
No.
You said you were in the palm
grove, yes.
Palm grove.
Yeah.
At the back of it, or just in the centre?
We were right just in the front of it, as it gave out onto the desert.
You were at the front of it?
Yes.
So to get
clear.
To your battery, you had to walk through the palm grove?
We had to go through...
Underground?
Underground, yes.
The palm grove, how thick was it, the trees?
Same as anywhere else all the way along there. Quite thick.
How many trees... Was there a tree sort of every yard or every 2 or 3 yards?
Oh, I don't know. It's a bit difficult to say. But you could have, half a dozen times as big as this. With palms right through to the river. That's what it was, you see.
The palms were date palms, were
they?
Date
palms, yes.
Did you ever eat the dates?
Oh, yes. Oh, the dates were very good, actually. If you got them fresh, like we did in Kurna, They'd just got the crop in there, and they were beautiful.
Had you ever eaten dates before?
Not to say eaten them, but there we had stacks of them ready to eat. And the Turks used to feed their men with them. They'd have a big pack of dates at the end of a trench. They used to sort of help themselves, I suppose. Because we very often overtook them. Oh, sorry. Yes, I was just wondering what it was.
Right. When you were digging these fortifications in the first couple of days, you were presumably under fire from the Turks.
Yes.
And they'd be digging there.
Yes.
And you'd be putting them under the same sort of fire.
Yes, right.
Were you aware that you were digging in for a siege, or were you? Did you just think you were digging in because you were going to be there for some time?
We just thought we would be there for a while, and we had to defend until the other rear guard people, the what should we call them, the second army, if you like, were able to move up.
So you didn't think you were going to be encircled?
No, we hadn't. The reason for stopping the cook was to simply have that short front. All the rest was river, you see, easily defended. And we weren't expecting to be there any length of time.
And when did it become apparent to you that you were going to be there for some time?
Well, after about the third battle that the forces down below had. We could see everything going, see all the explosive the shells bursting and everything. And we were almost certain they'd be through, but three times they failed.
Yes, well, I'll come to those sort of battles. You mentioned you were billeted in the town.
Yes.
So you didn't actually always live in the gun crew, because you weren't in the gun crews, were
you? No, that's right.
So were you with the captain in the town?
With the horses and the drivers were in the town, you see, in the streets, parked in the streets, all tied up in the streets, which of course were mud lanes. And when it rained, the horses were up to their bellies in mud.
And where were you billeted?
In the houses skirting the town. They cleared all the Arabs out of those. I don't know where they went to. They must have sent them out altogether before the siege was closed.
Could you describe the billet you were in?
Yes, it was a little like a coming off a mud street, a little courtyard where they used to keep their animals, I suppose, and where we put our horses, and we had our horses in the street as well. And then a little room, I suppose no bigger than this, perhaps a little bigger.
About 10 foot by 15 foot.
Yeah, something like that, was the house. No windows at all, just the door. So there was no air hole or anything in it. But it was great protection, because the end wall was giving us protection from firing from the front line.
Was it mud?
Yes, all
and
mud.
And quite thick?
Yes.
And did you have a bed or anything like that?
No, nothing. We never had beds at all. We always slept on the ground or on the sand.
How many... the floor was just mud, was it?
Mud, that's right, yes.
And how many were of you in this building?
A section, about 9 chaps in this room. 9 or 10.
And where were the officers billeted?
They were up in the gun line, in dugouts.
Similar to the other dugouts?
Yes, yes, they were dugouts specially for them. I think they had the shield of a wall in one place where our officers were.
Were the most of the local population still in the town?
Oh no, they cleared out. A lot of them have been cleared out, I think.
But were there any left? Or?
Oh yes, there were in the centre of the town. But they had been given the option of leaving, I understand, if they wanted to. But the thing was where they were to go, I suppose. And I really don't know where those that did go went to, because it was open desert all around.
What was the initial ration you were put on when you got into
Cut? Well, it was normal ration for a while, until after the first attempt to relieve us, when I think they began to realise that it was going to be a longer do and we couldn't get anything in. There was no means of getting anything in. They rounded up everything there was in the town in the way of grain or whatever, so that... and they were forever finding more grain.
Where did they find it?
In places in the town, you see.
What, in Arab parts of the town?
Yeah, yes. And so that it was really, actually, the stock that was left for us, I don't think was ever planned at all. It was just a matter of luck, the amount of stuff that was left for us. Certainly wasn't left for a three-month siege or a four-month siege. They could never have imagined it, I don't think. And I don't think they ever expected it to be a siege in that sense. They never thought the Turks, I don't think, would go forward and get onto the relieving force until very late. They seemed to, until I think it was General von der Goetz who came down from Germany, and he helped them and said, well, get on and get down. Never mind these chaps, leave them.
Could you take me through the sequence of events as you saw it, of the siege of Kut? Mm.
Well, at first, of course, we had a normal ration, because it were, I don't think they ever expected it to last so very long. But then after the build-up of the Turkish forces below us, and what I've just said about General von der Goetz getting them to get a move on, they rather sort of just contained us and built up. And it wasn't until the first attack failed to relieve us that everybody sort of said, well, we better get cracking and really economize. And I'm sure that the second time round, they never really did believe it would fail. But it did. And of course, the cat was in the, what do you call it then?
So you had full rations until the first attack
by
the British?
Reasonably so, yes.
And then you went on, they cut the rations?
And then, yes, well, of course, we got onto horse meat quite soon, really, because there wasn't much of that anyway.
Were they actually slaughtering the horses?
Yes.
Or did they just...
Yes, well, so many horses were killed every day for the job. That was, there was always plenty of that to go, because in any case, we couldn't feed the horses. You see, there was no grain for them, and no grass, no hay. We had to give them date palm, chunks of date palm to chew, and that sort of thing. So they came off very badly, very early.
They suffered a lot.
Oh, yes, terrible. And then when the rains came in December, they were up to their bellies in mud in the streets where they were parked, you see.
How about the horses of your battery and your own horse?
Yes.
They were suffering as well?
Oh, yes, the lot, everybody, was the same boat. You see, we couldn't exercise them either. Only when we first were cut off, we used to just take them round the streets in the village, you see, in the town, as a little exercise. But that threw up dust, and that was stopped. And then they were too weak to go round.
Was it stopped, the dust? Did the Turks fire because
yes,
they saw the Turks?
Yes.
It wasn't because the dust got
Yes, because of the firing, you see. It drew attention to movement. And they always opened up on any movement. But they tended just to a holding force when they started building up down below. But it was not until the first failure that I think we were really skimped for food.
When the rations were cut,
yes.
did you notice that in the sense, did
oh,
you
yes.
become hungry yourselves?
Well, yes, but we were getting used to it, the thing progressively, less and less daily. It's surprising. You don't sort of feel that you've lost anything very much, but you know you could eat a little more if you had it. You follow what I mean? It's not like being shut off overnight altogether for about a week and then really feeling hungry. You gradually get less and less, and your stomach gets adjusted to it. But you don't. You haven't got as much push and pull.
You mean you start to lose strength?
Yes, you're not as active.
So, how were the rations cut? You began to go into horse meat,
yes.
or beef.
Yes.
And how else? Well, you got less of it.
The bread was reduced. We had 4 ounces of bread in the end. That was the last ration of 4 ounces. That was for some time. And after that, it was finished altogether. There was nothing for the last day. We got no rations.
This
horse meat, you could have 2 pounds.
Did people take advantage of it? Were people willing to eat the horse meat?
Oh, we jolly well had to. There was nothing else. You couldn't buy anything or anything of that. That was all gone long ago.
So you had actually quite a lot of horse meat?
Oh, yes.
More, in fact, than the usual ration?
Oh, yes. We could have as much as you wanted of horse meat. And we see it was necessary to slaughter the animals because you couldn't feed them. So we were onto that fairly early, you might say.
Did you not start to run short of horses?
No. We had a tremendous number of horses, of course. Seeing a battery of horses, six guns, six horses. That's 36 or 40 for guns. Then first line, second line of wagons, an equal number. There's over 100 and some odd horses in a battery.
Did you slaughter your own horses or did they do it centrally?
The supply corps did it.
Did they ever get on to the horses of your battery?
Well, horses were called in. So many horses went every day.
I see. From every unit?
From every unit, yes.
Did you lose your own horse in that way?
No, I think she was left until about the last... In the last week or so, we were shooting them off so many a day. Actually slaughtering them in pits because there was no feed and we didn't want them. We were completely finished.
I'm just trying to clear this up in my head. Although, because it could sound as if you actually had plenty of horse meat.
Oh yes, we
did. If you had plenty of horse meat,
yeah.
Why did you get hungry? I mean, that's not. If you could just explain.
Well, you see, you must have a certain amount of bread. That's essential every day. Starch, and meat is all very well, but you can't live entirely on meat. And people were beginning to get bad stomachs from continuously eating meat and meat and meat and nothing else. The health of people was affected.
What about the Indians?
It's very rich horse meat, too.
I believe they refused to eat.
They wouldn't eat it, no.
And, what condition were they in?
Well, as far as was possible, they were given animal meat there was. Apart from the horse, but I think that was finished very early. But they were capable of living on bread or its equivalent for much longer than we were because of their normal eating habits. Normally they weren't great meat eaters, the Indian. But that's how it happened.
The meat that you were given,
yeah.
How was it cooked? It was done by the messing system as usual.
Yes, our usual cooks, the battery cooks, cooked it. It was boiled. We never had roast meat or anything of that sort.
So it was just boiled in a stew?
Yes, yes. With no vegetables.